Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
We've actually been around for 4 years because we started with Into Darkness.
Was that four years ago? Well, I was gonna say I didn't want to sell it short. I guess we must have just hit four years then.
2013, yeah.
Because
so we're right at that mark. Because I was on that podcast.
Yeah, well, that was
I'm the Star Trek guy.
Yeah, Star Trek guy.
Been on all the Star Trek discussions.
Well, you say yeah, and that was the first episode because that's it was mm-hmm. too boldly. It was before I had my cool naming convention that I've used more or less since the beginning.
Right.
So yeah, I was one of just too boldly go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's only fitting that we take the time to honor Trek Timber the way that it should be by devoting... I mean, this is something we rarely do. You know, this is... Mm-hmm. We mainly get to talk about current films because those mm-hmm. are the narratives that typically are either currently reflecting culture or they're driving those cultural narratives. You know, like... We end up talking about a lot of the same themes when we talk about current movies. We see a lot of very humanistic kind of bows wrapped on lots of movies, especially like superhero movies. We're seeing lots more films about race and diversity that are coming to the forefront. We're seeing almost like horror make like a revival because horror kind of teaches us the best and worst of ourselves. And it's one of those times where people are really starting to ask what is the best and worst mm-hmm. that we are. So, like I said, we see a lot of these things, but it's rare that we have such a great opportunity to look back at a series that shaped so many, especially the people that are probably listening to this this podcast, who are in our general age bracket. whatever that bracket might be.
Somewhere around there. Somewhere in the...
You know, it definitely shaped my love of sci-fi. And I think it shaped a lot of our love of sci-fis. And the Next Generation wasn't trailblazing like the original series was, to a certain degree. But it also wasn't just created, lazily to cash in on a franchise.
Right.
So it actually took something that was a great idea and turned it into one of the most beloved sci-fi series of all time. And what I really like about that is, again, 30 years later, I was telling my wife the other day that I think Star Trek The Next Generation, as much as it's probably not my favorite show of all time, it might be like my desert island show. Because anytime I sit down to watch one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, I realize that I could watch the entire series of Star Trek The Next Generation.
It's not your favorite show, though?
I don't think
so. Why are you even on this podcast?
I don't know. It's my podcast.
Firefly is your favorite show, though.
It might be. I don't know. It's tough. And so that, like I said, that's a different conversation. I'm just trying to leave the door open. Yes. I don't want to.
We don't have time for tangents.
I don't want to deal in absolutes when I haven't had time to determine.
Hey, wrong franchise. Wrong franchise.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So what we're here to do is to almost have like a panel discussion. It's going to be a little bit different format than a normal Real World Theology episode. You know, we're not talking about the thing that we just saw. We're not, you know, talking about how it's currently reflecting culture specifically. But we're talking about the things that we love about this thing that has heavily influenced us. I've got Mark, you know, who's been on plenty of episodes. He's kind of like the Real World Theology Star Trek guy, which actually is actually saying something, because there's a lot of people at Real World Theology that really love Star Trek. So I don't want to knock anybody else out. And this,
I'm not the only Star Trek.
Yeah, you're not the only.
Or girl.
There you go. Just Trekkie in general, the gender neutral.
I'm a big Trekkie.
But and it's great to be able to team up with David, who is representing Redeeming Culture, a site that is doing really awesome work and is now sponsoring something that I'm hoping that everyone goes and reads, Trek Timber, which, before we really get started, David, kind of pitch Trek Timber to people, because we'll have a chance to pitch it kind of at the end too, but I kind of wanted to set the stage for like what this show was kind of spurred out of.
Yeah, so last year I did a month-long review series called Trek Timber for the original series in honor of its 50th anniversary. And this year it's I called together all the people I could find online that do stuff like Redeeming Culture and like Real World do, and asked them if they wanted to contribute an article about their favorite episode of Next Generation. And I had some great responses, and the articles that I'm seeing coming in that I'm editing are absolutely fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing some response from these, because these are some really hard-hitting, cutting-edge articles about seeing God in view other people and other races, and seeing God in the way that we view exploration and everything. It's awesome. It's wonderful to look at, and I'm really looking forward to showing it to people.
So like one for every day of the month. You're not going to
see. Yeah. That's right. One for every day of the month. So we're not restricting it. Last year we just did the first season of the original series, but we're not restricting it on this one. We're doing episodes from every season of Next Generation. So slog through the sometimes painful season one to go through all of it. So everything from 1 through 7. It's going to be a lot of fun.
What is it about season ones that are painful?
Well, season one, you're typically restricted on your budget.
I understand.
Uh-huh. You're trying to find your feet. I mean, I think that's a valid criticism. So lots of people look at Star Trek The Next Generation and they didn't know what they were getting. Mm-hmm. You know, was this just something mm-hmm. capitalizing off the, you know, the kind of rebooted popularity of the original series? I think you might argue that's the idea that might have got it pitched to get it made, but it quickly it became about the characters and you know, stories about humanity, not just stories about, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, not that the original series wasn't. Like you said, you can go back and go back to a year ago to Redeeming Culture and see what lots of those episodes in season one of the original series are about. But this idea that it really started diving into some tough stuff with characters. It's hard for me to say who my favorite character on The Next Generation is, because it typically changes from episode to episode. Mm-hmm. Even though it's usually Picard. But
Picard. And from the many talks I've had with you over the years, it's usually not Riker.
It's not Riker. But that's the thing. Like I love the fact that in Next Generation, I can really not like a character, but I can still love moments that they have.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so despite the fact that I overall find Riker very whiny, and I think he is incredibly problematic to current. What is it? Sensibilities about male, female power structures.
Roles, yes.
He still has great moments throughout the series. So like I said, I rarely find that there's not reason to like everybody at some point. So I'm kind of curious.
I get that with Pulaski, honestly, sometimes. The same sort of feeling. Like, I don't really like her, but every once in a while she has a moment.
Well, she has some really good... No, well, I think she's one of those characters that is in. She's in a lot of pretty good episodes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean,
she's awful. No, I'm serious. She's monumentally awesome. She's terrible. Monumentally awesome. And that was on purpose, kind of, because they wanted her to be, like, a female Bones. Mm-hmm. And she did that, but, like, without any, like, nuance or, like, you know, making you care about her.
Are you just uncomfortable when women assert themselves, Mark?
No, because I love Beverly Crusher. So, and it was, you know, anyway, that's in the past.
It's in the past.
Well, at least we can all agree that Riker was better with the beard than without, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. He was kind of stalkery with the beard, but he was just kind of super creepy without it. Yeah, yeah. So he was like, hey, lady. Like, I mean, in what magical future does playing the trombone get you ladies? You know? Like, trombone has never, doesn't, and will never get you ladies.
But you know what? I believed that it did when I was in middle school, and they asked me to choose an instrument for band. I was like, you know what? Will Riker played the trombone. I'm going to play the trombone.
When you
said that is a true story.
When you went to band class to play the trombone, did you turn the seat around and sit
and swing your leg over
and swing your leg way over it? Because that was crucial. That's
the key. That
might be where I went wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was it, not the trombone.
Well, as opposed to all the flute or the whatever players, because then you're just never going to get a woman. Because then you're like Picard, destined to be alone.
Oh, the Resican flute. Yeah. I see what you said. Yes.
So I'm very curious. Like I said, obviously David's already got a great story, but like this show has influenced us. I'm kind of curious, like Mark, how did you come to Star Trek: The Next Generation? Like when you discovered it, what was going on? Why was it influential? Why has it stuck with you for so long?
Well, I was a kid. I mean, I was on TV, and I mean, I guess that showed.
Well, lots of things were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was sort of a TV. I mean, I guess you could say I was a TV kid, for whatever that means. I watched a lot of TV, and it was the popular show of the time. I mean, it's like, you know, being alive now and watching whatever Doctor Who and Game of Thrones and these popular shows that are, you know, just permeating culture. And, I remember watching it weekly with my mom, and, you know, it was just a part of, you know, our kind of like TV night, you know, during the week. But it was more than that, you know. It's like, it started in what, 88, 87, and I was too young for that. I was 3 and 4 when it began, you know, so it was, I didn't pick it up until, you know, I think the first memory I have was Best of Both Worlds, you know, and Picard as the Borg, and
It's all downhill from there.
All downhill, yeah. That's why we're still talking about it 30 years later, because it's all downhill from
season 2. That was a lie. I'm lying.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember exactly the details, because, you know, I was 5, 6, 7 when this was on. So, it just, you know, and I stopped, and as I was preparing for this, Trek Timber and this podcast, I just had a moment where it was like, you know, oh my gosh, these characters have been a part of my entire life. You know, I've been thinking about, talking about, you know, adventuring, mm-hmm. you know, in my imagination with these characters for almost 30 years. I mean, 30 years since it premiered, but mm-hmm. I for about 25 to 30 years, this has been my life. And that's saying something for a show, but also just for me in terms of what this means to me. That's kind of my answer to that question, is that these characters have always been here. You know, there's plenty of shows that I like and enjoy, a lot of modern shows, a lot of shows from the 90s, a lot of shows, you know, I'm a TV kid, so I've seen a lot of TV. But these characters, especially, you know, Captain Picard, he's been my favorite character since I was a kid, and nobody has surpassed that yet, and probably not looking good that they're gonna. So, you know, it's just been a huge part of my life, and I've, you know, it's just stuff like, I remember when I was a kid, I had a Data coffee mug. It was his head. It was like, you know, a Data bust. And I mean, I remember that stuff. It's just part of my childhood, and now I've got, you know, the Funko Pop figurines of the entire, you know, Next Generation crew sitting on my desk at work. So, I mean, that's a huge staying power, and it's just been, you know, been mm-hmm. very intimately a part of my life.
Yeah. So you don't think you're going to get better than a Picard, huh?
I mean, I wouldn't say that there are characters that aren't better than Picard, but for me, my favorite character is probably not going to be surpassed. I mean, there's plenty of great TV characters, all of TV history, that I've also really, really, really enjoyed. You know, David Tennant's 10th Doctor came real close, and probably is a close second. I have him up on his Funko Pop figure right beside Picard up in my office. So that he's about the closest I've gotten. But yeah, why do you ask?
Well, I mean, you know,
you seemed like you were queuing up like a really good example there.
No, you were pretty adamant about it, and
it would take a lot. I mean, I'd have to live with that character for a long time.
Hmm. Well, I'm just saying that, like, I know that you can always use the excuse that you had a daughter, but you still didn't name your child John Luke.
Well, that's true. So. I did not. I mean, I had a daughter. I didn't name her Troy. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
For those who don't know,
why would you do that to a child?
Well, exactly. But for those who don't know, Fizz did name his son Jonathan Lucas, John Luke for short. Every time I see him, I call him Captain.
That's right. great pictures in Captain onesies, if anyone needs to see them.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
Yeah, I know you have. So, David, I'm kind of curious. Same thing. Like, just give me some background. Let's give the listeners some background, like kind of where you're coming from in regards to Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Pretty similar story. So my parents were Trek fans from way, way back. And so I was a toddler when Next Generation started. And it's just really literally been a part of the fabric of my life for a long time. And I don't know that I could have really pointed to a whole lot of, I mean, we grew up in the VHS era, so those things were super expensive, and I didn't have them. So I don't know that I could have told you the plot summaries accurately of any episodes of Next Generation until, you know, about the era of DVDs and Netflix. One of the first things that we did after my wife and I got married was watch all the way through Star Trek: The Next Generation. It's just been such a crucial part of my life and the way that I see and understand the world. And a lot of like running jokes in my family are about Star Trek: The Next Generation. So it's a big part of sort of who I am, not really who I am as far as like it's shaped who I am, but it's shaped how I talk about who I am. That kind of makes a little bit more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things about my one of the cool little parallels about my life is I've got a 2.5-year-old son right now, and so I was 2.5 when Next Generation came out, and so he's about the same age. He's going to be about the same age when Discovery comes out that I was when Next Gen came out. So I think that's a cool little parallel. I'm very much looking forward. I know the show may not be that great, but I'm just very much looking forward to watching a new Star Trek show with my son at the same age I was when I first got into it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I speak for all of us when we're really hoping that Discovery lives up to the Star Trek
absolutely.
Name.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot of sci-fi universes out there, and lots of them kind of have told a story, and that's really the story we needed to hear. But Star Trek, whether intentionally or not, opened up this entire universe that is just ready to have stories told in it. Like, it's such a cool, mm-hmm. Interesting universe with so many... you know, sometimes a little bit stereotypical, but like interesting creatures,
mm-hmm.
and interesting races and planets and mythos, just and ideologies conflicting. It's just such a great place to tell stories.
And that's largely thanks to Star Trek: The Next Generation. I mean, that Next Gen really immensely expanded the universe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's part of the thing too, because so Star Trek: The Next Generation came along at a time before serialized TV, or before mm-hmm. widely serialized TV,
right.
Because Deep Space Nine, probably Babylon 5 are the ones that you're thinking of that are really telling stories that aren't wholly episodic.
Right.
So we're still mostly getting episodes from Star Trek The Next Generation, but at the same time, they're finding a lot of success, like having recurring characters, telling storylines that end up paying off seasons later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we see viewers rewarded for sticking with it.
That's why it's the mm-hmm. most rewarding series finale of all time, because it, especially for its time, because it was so, there was no episodic, like you kind of follow a story the entire time. And when Q comes out and says, the trial never ended. I mean, it was just, I remember seeing that when I was a kid, and I had seen through reruns, you know, the original story and how that all came about. And I remember when it aired, and, you know, I was sad that the, I remember being sad that the show was ending, but just totally blown away by the fact that they bookended the entire series. I mean, it's just so, it's groundbreaking, but it's just so rewarding. It's so, I watched the finale today, and it was just still so satisfying to see Q again, you know, kind of wrapping this up. And then the way it ends is still like, well, the trial continues, so I'll see you out there. I mean, it's just, I mm-hmm. love the sense of wonderment of what's beyond, what's out there that Star Trek just, you know, just emanates out of the stories. And so,
well, has there ever been a more, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, yes, I was just going to say, has there ever been a more hopeful view of, particularly of humanity's role in the future? Thinking in TV or really anywhere, you know, the other popular science fiction, you know, if you're talking about Star Wars, obviously is not very hopeful. And you mentioned Babylon 5 earlier, Firefly. None of those are hopeful. Battlestar Galactica is the exact opposite of hopeful. But Star Trek, and particularly The Next Generation, is very hopeful. It's a very hopeful show. You know, mm-hmm. everybody is sort of on the same mission, and they're all sort of aiming in the same direction. And so even though there's in later seasons you see some conflict on board and that sort of thing, the core of Roddenberry's vision of this hopeful future where humanity had solved a lot of our problems and figured a lot of our stuff out, I think that's really something unique. I don't know that I've seen it really anywhere else. And partially, I think, because it struck this almost golden balance that nobody else probably could, or any sort of lesser writers could, between it's very hopeful, but it's not Pollyanna-ish. It's very, I don't know, measured in its mm-hmm. hopefulness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and I think that's something that I definitely want to talk about a little bit later, mm-hmm. once we kind of round the corner to what Roddenberry's vision of the future looks like.
Yeah.
But I think we're gonna naturally get there when we start talking about like some of our favorite episodes and moments.
But even so, it's still, and yes, I mean, there's that the Gene Roddenberry factor about this idealistic view of the future, but the writers make a conscious choice to be positive about humanity. I mean, Roddenberry died, mm-hmm. what, season 3 or 4? You know, while Star Trek was airing and being made,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they continued that, and they continued it on to Deep Space Nine and mm-hmm. Voyager and all the sequential stuff, and it still has this like, there's goodness in humanity, and it's worth fighting for. And I think that just permeates Star Trek, and especially, you know, if you look at it today, it's sort of a broad stroke statement to say that, you know, entertainment today is very much more pessimistic about humanity. But a lot of the, you know,
I'd say honest, but
yeah, it's honest. You know, because there's some shows out there that are not necessarily pessimistic, but a lot of them are. I mean, look at Game of Thrones and shows like that. That, you know,
or don't look at Game of Thrones.
Well, let's not get it. you want to talk for 4 hours on that? Because
nope.
I'll do that.
No, nope, we already had that episode.
Yeah,
you can go listen to that.
So, you know, it just there's you know, look, stuff like Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead. I mean, there's these shows that have a very negative view of humanity. So the fact that they're bringing, and I'd heard, I think it was Jonathan Frakes say, you know, he was asked, you know, several 5, 6, 7 years ago, well, can they make another, you know, Star Trek, the new movie had come out with, you know, the rehash of the original series, the 2009 movie. And they're like, can you do another series? And he's like, I really don't think so, at least not right now, because, you know, you're dealing with morality tales, you're dealing with a certain type of storytelling that is really the essence of Star Trek that isn't really kind of what viewers are into right now, and be hard to kind of sell them on without, you know, all the action and getting a little bit more pessimistic. Mm-hmm. And it's like Star Trek just has this hopeful spirit to it that isn't selling. and I think it's fascinating that they're doing Discovery. Are they gonna bring that out? I don't know. You know, I think they are, but we'll see.
Well, I think that even like once Roddenberry passed, and people took his idea and they turned it into their own, it inherently became slightly more pessimistic. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, honestly, I think that Deep Space Nine and Voyager. I'm not mentioning Enterprise because Enterprise. I know. But as far as like the ones that like the majority of people have seen or tried to watch, like those I would say are much more highly pessimistic. Than something like The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. Next Generation still had tinges or fingerprints of the original series on it, kind of like we're doing the good, we're going to be the good. Mm-hmm. And then it started being like, things aren't quite as easy as they seem, mm-hmm. especially with Deep Space Nine. And I mean, I think, and that's why like The Next Generation probably, it's so crazy to me that this is what we're arguing for. So we're all saying that we love The Next Generation, but we're also like, so there's gotta be tons of other people with us. You know, we're still talking about it 30 years later. They're still they just had a convention, in Las Vegas for the 30th one, where tons of people were there. They still have these conventions every year. People love the show, and yet we still say there's not interest in having like another one that's still positive, which is right. So crazy.
Right.
But I think that's probably why it sits kind of at the top of the Star Trek universe for me. I wish it was more serialized. Like I wish it was kind of like a week to week longer storylines, because I think you can do a lot more with that. Mm. But at the same time, what I think it did is, I think probably some of the most insightful and well-written episodes of any Star Trek thing that I've ever seen, are probably in Deep Space Nine. Mm. But Deep Space Nine is like a roller coaster to me. Like mm-hmm. when Deep Space Nine is bad, it's almost unwatchable. It's awful. But when it's good, it's the best that Star Trek has ever produced. I feel like Star Trek The Next Generation is something that started out as kind of like low budget, sometimes hard to watch, with interesting characters, which I would put right below or right around medium for me. Mm-hmm. And it basically is going up a hill for 7 seasons.
Yeah. I mean the height of the show is better than
like
most science fiction.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's continually high quality. Like I mean, so one of the next questions we're going to talk about is like basically favorite episodes. I'm sitting trying to make a favorite episode list, and if I made a favorite episode list of Deep Space Nine, something that I'm admitting probably has some of the best stories in all of Star Trek, I could probably easily be like, these are like the 4 episodes, you know, these 4.
Yeah.
With Star Trek mm-hmm. The Next Generation, I can't do that. I'm like, okay, I'll just put 3. Okay. I mean 4. Okay. Just these 5, top 5 and I'm good. And then now I have like a top 10 list.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, they're almost all interchangeable to me.
They really are.
Yeah.
And that's with me knowing that I'm intentionally leaving out things like the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Because I know everyone else is going to mention that.
Yeah.
You know? So, it's just such a high quality. And, like, almost every time I sit down to watch it, I remember being however old I was when it came on. Like, 7, 8 years old. Somewhere between 6 and 8.
Yeah.
watching it, and I never really think of my dad as kind of like a sci-fi nerd, but like honestly, mm-hmm. I think he kind of was back then, because I remember him watching old school Doctor Who and him watching old school Battlestar Galactica and things like that. But I was too young to really understand like what was on TV. I just had like these pictures, but I remember I finally was old enough to kind of understand what was going on when Star Trek The Next Generation came on, and I remember watching it every week and it was like the highlight of my week.
Yeah.
And then, because I didn't understand things when I was younger about like things came on the same night and stuff. I remember like as soon as it had been out for a couple seasons, it started going into syndication. I remember watching it all the time. It was one
all
of those.
The time. I watched it all the time.
It was one of those things when I would get home from school, like in either middle school or high school. I can't remember which one it was, but it was the thing that was like, you know, TBS or TNT would have like 3 hours of Star Trek and it's all different seasons.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, well, TNT, you know, so it's awesome. So it's not like continuous watching 3 hours. Yeah. I'm like, I'm watching three different consecutive seasons.
Yeah.
And I would sit there and, you know, as much as I want to beat some kind of drum for not sitting your kids in front of the TV and letting it raise them, my goodness, I loved every single hour that I sat in front of
every
TV
hour.
And watched this. And I think it made, it made me think more. It made me love science fiction more. It made me love science more. It made me think more about like my place and humanity. And like it like David, like you're saying, it shaped who I am. It shaped how I thought about the world around me.
Absolutely.
And like I said, those are some of my favorite times. And like the I think the bad thing about it was that since I didn't have that understanding, I remember that I couldn't think of a Star Trek The Next Generation episode that I'd never seen multiple times. Like, you know, many, many times. But I don't think I'd ever sat and watched it. Because people would talk about like, oh, season one's not that great. Season three is also all right. And season seven, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know. I just remember I like all these episodes.
Yeah.
My wife had seen some, but she's not seen all. So when sometime a couple years into our marriage, we decided to go through the whole thing because I was like, I'd never gone start to finish. And I did. And I was like, I love all of this.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to actually experience Star Trek from watching it episodically and then going back and watching it chronologically. Because I enjoyed it all almost in a completely different way. Just seeing like characters grow and, you know, effects get a little bit better. Stories get more complicated, them obviously taking more risks and doing more maybe controversial things on the show. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. And I would probably give Star Trek The Next Generation almost all the credit for me loving science fiction today.
Yeah, I would.
I would go further and say that I would give Star Trek The Next Generation almost all the credit for me loving any sort of filmed narrative today. I think it's been that influential in my life and made me think that much about it that I think that I would go even further and say, yeah, science fiction, but also even further than that.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's one of the first things that I remember wanting to watch on TV. You know, not just being like, oh, I'd rather watch TV for TV's sake, but wanting to watch it.
And it was different, you know. I mean, how lucky are we that we grew up with this show?
Our
childhood. I mean, I love, you know, being that lucky. But it, you know, it was different back then. You didn't have like the internet and you didn't have things that were just everywhere, like advertising all these shows. You know, it was like, so you'd go to school and your friends would be talking about it. It was much more of like a communal, tangible kind of enjoyment of this show, because it was like, that's what your, you know, friends were talking about. Because I remember the movies I'd go to would be like, you know, I might see a commercial on TV for it, but it was after all my friends had talked about it. And it's like, with Star Trek The Next Generation, like I remember my friends, you know, it was the earliest kind of, you know, group of friends type of thing that we talked about was like, you know, I had Star Trek figurines. Like I said, I had a coffee mug of Data's head. Like I had this stuff. For Christmas one year, I got, you know, an Enterprise, you know, I got the ship, and it was just a thing that we talked about all the time, especially even after the series, after it went, you know, once it went into syndication, Generations, the movie came out, you know, First Contact, it just kept going for us as friends. So, anyway, I think that it's essential for sci-fi in general, but especially for me. I mean, like, but I would, you know, we're going further. David went further. I'm going to go even further and say, I think it's, hugely influential for many people to have gotten into sci-fi, and even today, if they go back and see it, I mean,
How many memes of Star Trek The Next Generation do you see every day?
Like, currently.
Yeah. Currently.
Yeah.
It still, like, permeates culture hugely, so.
Gosh. So, I
with Picard holding his hand out, like, asking what's going on
here. Yeah. What the heck is going on?
Well, there's so many of those. You know, the gif of him putting his head in his hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not to one up, but I was sitting there listening to both you guys talk about like specific things that it had done for you. I think technically that Star Trek The Next Generation is probably what made me want to tell stories.
Probably me too.
Because the first time, one of the things that we had to do in my, let's see, what grade would this have been? Seventh grade. In our seventh grade science class, we all had to write like a 2-page science fiction story. So I wrote an 8-page Star Trek fan fiction.
Nice.
Star Trek Next Generation fan fiction. You know, where I used all my classmates as like the crew and stuff. And
yeah.
So I wrote that, and then, before that, gosh, I forgot, in sixth grade, I'm not sure if, depending on your age, if you had AG or whatever, the academically gifted program. Grades, yeah. AG was a thing, good or bad. And I had the fortune to be in it. And one of our things for our writing assignment was, again, we had to write like a 3-page story. And I wrote a 12-page story with my friend, where I would sit on the phone because we didn't have the internet, we didn't have phones when we were in sixth grade we probably do now. So I remember I would call my friend up, my partner up, and I basically dictated a story to him on the phone for like hours, multiple nights of Star Trek fan fiction that I know I have somewhere too. Mm-hmm.
You got to post that.
That I made illustrations of. I wanted to tell stories in this universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought they were worth telling.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Sixth grade, Mikey. Gosh. Well, right in the
story. And now you've named your kid Jean-Luc.
That's right.
You're dedicated.
I'm dedicated. I mean,
are you as dedicated as I love Picard so much that I actually went bald just like he did?
I'm trying. I'm just on a much longer term.
You're getting there, yeah.
Yeah.
By the time you're his age, when he's captain of the ship, you'll be with me.
If we all looked as good as Patrick Stewart does bald, I think there would be a lot more bald men in the world.
Was it, Mark, right. Did you post this, or did I just randomly see it from someone else, where it was like Captain Picard, and then it was like Captain Picard in the series aged 20 years, and then it was like, I think I was doing research for my review for The Inner Light. And then it was like Patrick Stewart actual 20 years later.
Yeah.
And it was like, he basically looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
But when they aged him like 20 years in, or 30 years in the makeup, like he was all wrinkly and like about to fall apart.
Yeah.
And it's like, nope, he just looks exactly the same. Exactly 30 the same. Years right. later. Yep. I was like, he is sucking all of your life force.
Yes, pretty much. He's going to live to 130. So.
Yeah. Gosh.
We can only hope.
Gosh.
We're talking about this, and I can just—I'm thinking about all the people that are actually listening to the podcast and like imagining what their version of what we're saying is our childhood stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
people that grew up with childhood or watched it in syndication in the late '90s and stuff like that. Like, what was there?
So I know we don't often like do like response questions, but I really do because I love Star Trek: The Next Generation so much. I'm hoping that throughout this conversation, we're going to hit on things that remind people listening to this episode, the things they love about The Next Generation, the things that the wacky things that, you know, did it make you go bald because you love Picard so much? Like, what did you do because you love this? Like, how did it influence you? Like, whenever we post this, I'm really hoping that you guys take the time to tell us things like that. So, I know this is going to sound like this because it's obviously the three of us doing this, but I don't want this to just be us getting to, I mean, it is kind of us getting to be very cathartic about how much we love Star Trek
What was your favorite thing? But what was your favorite thing?
Yeah, but I do kind of want to know, because, like I said, I think this is a very important show, and it's obviously been very influential, and I think it's surprising. Like I said, I forgot that it was so influential on me that, like I said, I was writing like fan fiction when I was like in sixth grade. Like, I mean, I would have never not admitted to doing that, but it just, I didn't connect those things when I was prepping for the show. Mm-hmm. And so just to see those things. So, let's get a little more specific, you know, like we're throwing out is influential and maybe do this, maybe do that. But what specific episodes, I know we're going to probably have lots of overlap. And technically we could all say, episode 1 in season 1 through episode 24 through season 7. But all David, David, what are some of your favorite episodes, kind of like what's happening in those episodes, and like why is it that episode that sticks with you?
Okay, I've got my short list has 5 items on it, and the 5th one is all the time travel episodes. So I'm going to try to...
All the ones with Picard.
So I'm going to try to do this quickly. Right. So my number one, my top, is Darmok. I think it is the best of Star Trek. It's the most unique first contact story, and I think it's like the platonic ideal of what Star Trek is. It's got, you know, exploring and first contact and peaceful negotiation and a little bit of action and an unique sci-fi premise and a storyline. It's awesome. It explores metaphor and imagery and communication as a metaphor for understanding. So it uses metaphor as a metaphor for something else. And I just think that's so mind-bendingly so perfect. It's so meta.
It's so good. It's such a good episode.
It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Mark, you mentioned you watched All Good Things before recording tonight. I watched Darmok before recording this one.
Yeah, there you go.
It's absolutely my favorite Star Trek episode. Not just my favorite Next Generation episode, my favorite Star Trek episode, maybe my favorite episode of anything ever. I don't know if I want to necessarily commit to that yet, but it's definitely my favorite Star Trek episode.
That's awesome.
I mean, is it like so being able to drop phrases from that episode in real life, I think automatic, like I love watching either the confusion on people's faces or like this unbridled excitement that people get when, like,
his eyes uncovered.
Yeah. Like, you know, like you're going to do something and they're like, oh, you know, like, I think we can do it together. And you're like, you know, Darmok Ejelada Tanagra.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, like their head explodes and they're so excited.
Because it's like the people that don't get it, like, it's whatever. But like the people that do get it, it's like you have that instant connection.
Yeah.
You're like, Darmok! You know?
or, you know, like I think it was one of my joys, again, to use that phrasing to, I think I've done that stuff with my wife as well, you know.
Right.
I'll be like, Fizz and Laura, asleep on the couch. You know, like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, see, I use the correct summation of the episode when people are always like, Darmok and Jalata Tanagra. And I'm like, well, technically, if you're talking about the episode, it should be Picard and D'Thon at Elendrell.
Yeah.
Or you could go with Darmok and Jalad on the sea if you really wanted to be like, you know.
Dang. That's
right. I'm saying.
Yeah. We could just do an hour and a half on this episode. So it's really hard.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that would definitely be Shaka when the walls fell, though. So we should probably move on.
Yes. I love it.
It's like, Star Trek.
But hey, Timba, his arms open.
Yeah.
His arms wide.
So what other episodes made your list?
So Cause and Effect. I realize that is a time travel episode, so it kind of goes in with number 5, but I think that's probably my second favorite. Just sort of this trial and error, effort and failure, sort of, crazy time loop thing with, like, I don't know, it almost... it's shot in this really unique way. Jonathan Frakes directed the episode, and he did this really unique thing where he actually shot all of the scenes that repeat individually, like over and over again from different angles and everything.
Yeah.
And so you get a different angle of the same shot in every scene. And the first time I saw it, I thought that the Netflix had glitched, or I guess I probably saw it on TV first, and I thought that they had screwed up at the network, because like it was the same, like, oh, we already saw this part, like what's going on here, and just the way that it sort of unravels. I mean, honestly, I think probably the common thread among my episodes is that when they figure out the answer, like in Darmok, when Picard figures it out, and then like when he's being transported away, and so he's not there to help the other captain, and cause and effect, when they figure out what's going on and they start working to change it, and it looks like it's all going to fall apart and everything, those moments when they figure it out, and the episode sort of gets all tied together, it's a moment that sort of makes you want to pause it and sit about it for a second. Sort of the common theme among my favorite episodes.
And that's the Kelsey Grammer episode, where Kelsey Grammer was at the end.
Yeah.
He was caught in it for like 80 years or something like that.
That's, that's the one where the they keep hitting the nacelle and the ship blows up, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Because and then they have to, he looks and sees the Riker's suggestion or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The number three.
Yep.
Yeah, the number three keeps popping up everywhere. That's cool.
Right.
That's one of those ones that I keep remembering. I never knew what the title of that one was.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I was thinking, I was, when you were talking about that, I was misremembering, and I was thinking also the one where they, it was the alien race that wanted to destroy them, and so they erased their memories, and they kept trying to choose, like trying to, we're missing things, and there's things that are growing three extra days, and they should have, it's only been, you know, like Data's the only one that knows.
And then Ro and Riker are getting jiggy.
Well.
Right,
they're like,
I see why you remember that one. Yeah.
Well, it's always one of those things where it's like, where like they obviously had that in a particular reason. It's like, why do I feel so comfortable here? Maybe I spent a lot of time in your room or whatever. Yeah, okay.
And they actually hate each other.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
maybe. So I think that one was either Clues or Conundrum. I don't remember which one, because I feel like those are,
I think Conundrum.
I think it's Conundrum.
Episode. Yeah, Conundrum sounds right. And see, Conundrum's great because it's one of those things that pops up on, like, if you watch any clips of, you like, on YouTube of Star Trek, the justification for preemptive strike keeps coming up in my feed from, like, that speech that the alien is giving about, like, how, you know, the you have to, you know, you can't let them have a chance. You got to destroy it when you have the chance and stuff like that. Then he has that conversation with Worf, and it's so great. Gosh, so many good, good. Actually, so when you're describing to throw in one of mine, which I'm sure is on a lot of people's lists as well, when you're describing like the first time you see cause and effect, you're kind of wondering if there's a glitch. I remember a couple of the episodes that I really liked the first time I saw them. You know, I've seen lots of them so many times, I forget that feeling of not knowing.
To correct, because there should be people that are listening to podcasts screaming at their computer that we're not getting right. It was Clues.
It was Clues.
Yeah.
Okay. What's Conundrum then?
Oh, okay.
Conundrum. I don't know.
Is it even an episode? Or just
it is an episode. Yes.
All right.
I'm Googling because you know we have these computers.
Oh, you know what?
Amnesia leaves the crew with the ability to run the ship and no memory of becoming involved in a war they find themselves fighting. That was that one, yeah.
Yeah, we mixed up the two episodes. We sort of combined them both. One is the one where Data remembers everything, and the other one is the one with the sort of like inserted alien first officer.
Right. Conundrum is the one with Ro and Riker.
Oh, it is.
It is.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Gosh. Right. This is what. So one of the.
So that's the problem. Like, even though I've been watching this series, rewatching this series for years and years and years and years, it's still hard to remember like all the names of the episodes. There's so many good ones, and you're like, "What was that one?" And you're like, "I mean, it's just." I struggle with that.
So that's actually what. So something very interesting that I have noticed about how I've watched TV is that when I used to watch things as they came on TV, I never knew what the episode titles were. because I was it wasn't until like I had them on DVD that mm-hmm. I could go back and actually, or that they were listed on Netflix, that they were listed by title,
right?
And I just don't spend enough time on the Trek Wiki,
yeah,
you know, yeah. to know.
We call ourselves true Trekkies, but true Trekkies can name every episode,
yeah,
from the first to the last in sequential order.
You guys know the titles on the title card at the very beginning of the episode, right?
I know, yes.
Yeah, but you never pay attention to that. You're too busy listening to the card be like,
yeah. Captain's log, Stardate 4115. Yeah.
I'm out here being awesome. True.
Yeah.
You seem to say.
Wait, David,
you can boil it down to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the rest of your top five?
Oh, okay. So number three is Parallels, which that's the one where Worf is sort of pulled into a different alternate reality.
Yes.
And then he keeps getting pulled into different alternate realities. And so, for my mind, a multidimensional episode is almost as good as a time travel episode. And so it's really interesting.
That's the one where there's all the Enterprises that show up at the end?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So that's the one where when they finally figure it out, there's this moment and you like, oh, he's being pulled around by Geordi's visor, and you sort of want to like pause and think back and like, okay, well, when did I figure out that things were going wrong, and like, was Geordi mm-hmm. actually in all these scenes? And then you're like racking your brain to figure out like what all the differences were and how many different realities has he been in, and all that sort of stuff. And then there's this great scene at the end when Worf is ends up at the very end. He's on a ship with Riker as the captain, where Cetus in Best of Both Worlds, and so then they hail when all the Enterprises start coming in. They hail the Enterprise that we've been following for, you know, six seasons or however long. Mm-hmm. and Riker sees Picard on the other screen, and there's just this moment of like. Longing and like shock on his face, and he's like, it's been a long time, sir. And it's just such a beautiful moment with, you know, Riker playing this incredibly subtle moment where he's like still totally in control, but he's still like, gosh, I really miss this guy. And then also he gets to like scream and look like a wild man with
the beard, beard,
and say, I'm not going back.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, and there's
the darkest timeline,
and that's the one that starts off, and it centers around Worf's birthday party, and that they throw him a surprise party, and it's just this wonderful, you know, Worf getting thrown like this surprise birthday party that's like very typical like office birthday party, you know, with like a white sheet cake, and you know, it's just so funny. It, just to see him like have to relive it because he's like, oh, did we just do this? I don't want to do this. You know, it's just, it's really great. So yeah, that's a great episode. You got one more, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Number four is actually going all the way back to, I think, season two, Measure of a Man.
Yeah.
Which that's like Lawyer Picard at his most lawyer-y Picard-y. and it's just such a,
this is great. It's adjectives. Just
such a great exploration. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I am a writer. It's just such a great exploration of like Imago Dei and free will and what makes humans humans. And it's just there's that moment when Picard gives his big speech at the end, and he's like, well, we're out here to find new life. Well, there it sits. And you just want to pause it, and you just want to think like, oh yeah, I mean, what makes life life, and what makes humans humans, and why do we have free will, and why do we have value and worth, and why can we make our own choices? And it brings up all these questions and all these ideas, and it's a really great episode. Probably one of the best from the early episodes.
Oh, for sure. It's one of the best of the series, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
That was still, you know, Picard in the first two seasons was still like this savage Englishman. Like, he would just dole out savagery. That's where the whole shut up Wesley came from. You know, it was like he was still that really hard, hardened, you know, captain of this. He was very proper in English, and there it sits, you know, like that was that very harsh, you know, and you watch the finale and he's kind of got this light streak, you know, he's very kind of humble, and, you know, it's funny. That's great.
I think probably the last time we see him like that is probably when he's broken down in Chain of Command, and he's like, four
lights. Yeah. Oh man, that is one of the greatest moments. Who's next?
I guess you.
Okay.
No one cares about what I have to say.
Yeah, no, we really don't. I don't know. It's kind of like if you look at it when I was a kid versus what, you know, I think what my favorite episodes are now. Mm-hmm. I think they're different lists.
I find that same to be true for me.
Right. I mean, like, because when you're a kid, like, the holodeck stuff is like, I mean, it's fistful of datas is probably what my 7-year-old self would say. Because I just loved Data so much as a kid. I mean, again, I drink coffee out of a coffee mug with his face. Yeah. You know, so if it stuff like that, all of the holodeck episodes especially when I was a kid, I loved. I mean, like Ship in a Bottle, and when the holodeck would go wrong and take over the ship, and it was just fantastic.
When Barclay was on the holodeck mostly.
Yeah. Barclay. Yeah.
Oh, Barclay being like, this is what people would actually use the holodeck for. Yeah, right. Like, yeah. Stop pretending you're going to be Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
This is what people really would do on the holodeck.
Yes, yes. Which is actually a fantastic.
Learning how to talk to girls.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, just talk to girls.
Just talk to them. Yeah. That's it. Just talking. Which is a fantastic observation about this idealistic society, and Barclay's in there doing like, yeah, you know, this is fantasy, yeah. Right?
He's supposed to be the weird one. I'm like, he's the most human person on that ship right now.
Yeah. Barclay's underrated for sure. Mm-hmm. But I, as a kid too, what lines up now today is all the Q episodes. I mean, they're just, I love Q so, so much. And I think he's not only just a wonderful character, expertly played and written. I mean, John Delancey is created such a unique character. I mean, there's really not many like him. But he's crucial to the series, and you know, it's just that bookend of the trial of humanity, and this kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. He's almost like an anti-Data. You know, very curious about humanity, but doesn't really want to be a human. You know, he has kind of this like, let's play with all of these ideals and all of the stuff that he came in and did. And just, it was kind of like the holodeck episodes where you get transported to another world and you get stuck there. It's like, you know, in Cupid, you know, Robin Hood times, you know, I am not a merry man, you know, that, I mean, that's Q doing that. And all of the stuff, you know, when I liked the unknown of Star Trek, especially when I was a kid, of like magic sort of can happen to Q is basically magic. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the greatest moments in the show, and you know, just like every time I see it makes me just tear up and bawl like a baby, is when he allows Data to laugh. I mean, it's such a human moment, and it's so perfectly placed, and it's like, you sacrificed yourself to save me, so I have a gift for you. And you know, Data's like, please don't make me human. He's like, I would never do something as horrible to you as make you human. But I have something I think you'll like. And he just, you know, Data's laugh is so big, and it's so jovial, and it's just everything that you kind of built up to as that Data character for so long. You just get just a glimpse of it. Of this like humanity,
he's and mad props towards. To Brent Spiner on that. Mm-hmm. Oh, perfectly acted,
absolutely. And the best part of the laugh is when he kind of stops and he's like, "Yeah," you know, like and he gets that, and the looks on everybody in the bridge, you know, where they're all looking, you know, they're like looking at you, what in the world is going on? And they ask him, "What was that?" And he's like, "I do not know," you know. So it's just a wonderful. I love Q. I loved his irreverence to everything human, you know, and just his, the unexpected ability. And so that kind of all comes together for me in Tapestry. Tapestry's it's hard to definitively stand on, this is my favorite episode, but if, you know, you're forcing me to do it, I pick Tapestry because, you know, there's, I'm writing the kind of this 4-part series, and it's based on 4 different episodes. They're all Q episodes because he's sort of the Tapestry of Star Trek, this kind of serialized, if there is a serialized story to Next Generation, he is that that story. He's the, you know, impetus of that story. and it kind of continues in different ways. You know, at the beginning of Counter Four-Point, he puts him on trial. It's kind of an exploration of human nature. You know, what is humanity? How dare you come out here? You know, then in Q-Who, when he spins them out to greet the Borg and you know, kind of alerts the Borg to their presence, and just that's the big bad. I mean, that's the big bad of Next Generation, and just the reveal of that ship as it's looming out there. It looks like a haunted house just hanging out and what is this thing? It's really like, how dare you explore space? This is what space is. So exploring the nature of space, you know, I think in All Good Things, when you're looking at, which All Good Things is probably my second favorite episode, just for what it did and just the gravity of it. But, when you're looking at All Good Things, it's more of like all of your actions matter, not just to you, but to humanity. It's a very gospel centric kind of idea that we matter to each other and we, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But Tapestry is an expression of your personal nature and what all of the little, you know, moments in your life mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it's a wonderful moment. It's hilarious. I remember my earliest memory of that episode is a friend of mine, walking around being like, Gene Luck Picard, you know, as a message for Gene Luck Picard here. Is there a Gene Luck Picard? we laughed about that for, you know, forever. That was just one of my favorite things. But there's that quote from Picard I've got right here. It says, there are many parts of my youth that I'm not proud of. There were loose threads, untidy parts of me that I would like to remove. But when I pulled on those threads, it unraveled the tapestry of my life. And it's just, to me, that's a very powerful, something I focus on. You know, I struggle in boring, dull moments of life, feeling like I am wasting my time. I'm not achieving my purpose. I'm just sitting in front of the TV. You know, I feel like sometimes I struggle with that. And that quote is just so affirming to me, that even the boring moments matter. Even the little moments of your life, they build a tapestry that makes you you. So that is my justification for, I guess, why that episode. But I mean, there's just so many great episodes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to nail down one, but Tapestry really meant a lot to me. I remember even just when I saw it as a kid, it was like, this is so amazing, you know, just going back and seeing his youth, and it's sort of that time travel altering kind of thing where it's still Picard that you know, but like he's the young Picard, and so you get to see his actions as a kid. It's more, that's about as much origin story as you get on Picard. There's not a whole lot of backstory in Picard. He's just Picard, and you respect him. He's your captain.
I mean, because how could you honestly, like, tell a story that would get to a man that's that awesome?
I know.
You know?
Right?
They're like, nothing we could say would make people believe that someone turned out like this.
Right?
Let's just start with him like this.
Yeah. I mean, I remember early on in the series, there was, like, you know, when he revisited his old ship, and, you know, he had that moment where he got overtaken, and I mean, that sort of told a little bit about
this. With the Ferengis and stuff?
Yeah. I think that one. He did the
Picard maneuver.
The Picard maneuver, yeah. It was what it was. Yeah. But I think the thing about Star Trek The Next Generation is there's just moments, because, you know, I love Worf and I love Data and I love Geordi, and they all just have these, like, seminal episodes. I mean, even like Troy and Crusher, they have these episodes. All the characters have these episodes. You know, obviously Troy and Crusher didn't get as much.
Yeah, and when they give Crusher an episode, play, it's like some kind of creepy,
she fell in love with a weird guy.
With a weird ghost thing.
But nonetheless, there are seminal moments for every character. I mean, like, one of my favorite moments with Picard is, like, when they first meet the Cardassians, and like, at the very end, and this Cardassian's real smug, and Picard gives him this, like, talking to, and he's like, rest assured, we'll be watching. And I remember watching that several years ago, like, kind of revisiting it for the first time in a long, long, long time, and I was like, oh, man, that's Picard. Like, how do you back down this Cardassian, this is, you know, this imposing figure that you've really, in the storyline of the show, just met? Like, he kind of was, like, intimidated by that. Like, yeah, that's Picard, baby. Yeah. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on about moments. I mean, Measure of a Man is anything with Data. I mean, like, when I was a kid, Data was it. Mm-hmm. Like, Data was so awesome. And he still is. I love Data so much. I hate that he died in Nemesis.
Yeah.
I was like, you could have written in something about...
bring any of that before to me.
I know, man. But you could have written in something like, you know, Brent Spiner didn't want to, like, play Data old, but it's like, Data put, like, gray in his hair to look older and all the things. Can you just be like, I'm just going to put on some pounds. I'm just going to make my skin look, I just, you know.
Well, they also, they introduced that, the his mom, the mom android, I forget what episode this was, but late, like, season 7 or something, or early, maybe early season 7, where he met his mom, and she turned out to be an android that was programmed to grow old and die. Like, okay, well, maybe he just downloaded that program and you know, plugged it in.
Absolutely. There was a, there is a great, if you want kind of a continuation of Star Trek, The Next Generation, there's a great comic that was a, it was a preview comic to the 2009 Star Trek movie with Eric Bana's Romulan, whoever that was, like how he kind of got the ship and everything. And Picard is an admiral, and he and Data has control of the Enterprise. He's captain of the Enterprise, and it's and they explain in there that B4's programming failed, and Data's emerged, and Data was still alive. So.
I remember. I think I read that like right before the movie came out, and then not since. But
I have it. I have that comic, and I sometimes I pull it out and hug it.
I love it.
It's my precious.
Well, when I think of the episodes that stick with me the most, or my favorite episodes, I feel like what I'm doing is echoing a lot of the thoughts. There's episodes that meant a lot to me when I was younger, that I probably wouldn't say are the best now, but you know, young Fizz, couldn't shake them. There's episodes that I do recognize now for their, profundity, and just ones that I just enjoy on a different level, to try to round out lots of this stuff. I think, again, the best of both worlds is hard not to mention. So I want to make sure that we're acknowledging the fact that...
I figured we'd get around to it. I mean, well, Best of Both Worlds is like the seminal episode of the series.
Yeah, I think just so no one listens and says, I can't believe you didn't talk about the Best of Both Worlds. Like, I think the Best of Both Worlds is not only probably the best that Star Trek The Next Generation has to offer, but it's also not a mystery to why it's the best.
Yeah.
Because it gives, there's something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a mystery. Like, I love Generations because I love Picard just chewing scenery all day. But like most people love First Contact because First Contact has like Picard chewing scenery and action.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
The Best of Both Worlds has something for everybody. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's a reason that they show that two-parter as like a standalone movie. Oftentimes.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I want to mention that because like none of us are mentioning it really on our list, but I feel like it needs to be mentioned.
It's on my list. I mean, how do you not choose Best of Both Worlds? There's other, when you look at like a top 25 list, it's like you have to choose. Well, I'm sure you're going to mention some, but like Yesterday's Enterprise, Inner Light. I mean, there's huge episodes that just are define the series.
So, David, when you I actually started to mention before, when I think about episodes that I remember seeing for the first time, I remember seeing Yesterday's Enterprise for the first time, and when Tasha appears, I was generally freaked out. I remember not being like, what is happening?
Yeah.
You know, like I watch it today and I'm like, oh, this is a cool episode where Tasha's there and they do some things and it has the dude from Happy Gilmore. So that's great. But
Shooter McGavin.
That's right.
So that's cool. But like when I remember seeing it the first time, I was like, how is she here? I am so interested in what is happening.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those episodes that stuck with me for a long time. I also think it's still a really great episode. I would say an example of something that has maybe actually, more episodes that really stuck with me when I was a kid. Darmok.
Yep.
I still think Darmok's a great episode for all the reasons that we've already mentioned. I think it's a little high concept, now. I still think it's great, but I think it's more concept than it is super, super great as an episode, because there's a couple there's a couple logic holes in just how the alien race is depicted, but it still doesn't negate the fact that it's still like a meta, like, understanding of all the things you said before. And it's still infinitely quotable and completely unique.
Yeah, it's so unique. I mean,
it
doesn't have an equal.
I just don't know how to, like, not tear it down.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, say that there, I think there are a couple criticisms, but I mean, classic, iconic Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing is true with Conspiracy for me. Mm. Conspiracy was one of the first TV shows that really kind of, like, gave me the creeps.
That's the one where they, you know, blow up the guy at the end, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and they have like those bugs that crawl in people's mouths.
Yeah.
And stuff.
It was like horrific.
Yeah.
That was the episode where like, whoa guys, maybe we should pull back a little.
Yeah. Because that was creepy.
It is, yeah.
And like it was one of the episodes that really stuck with me when I was young. And like I said, looking back on it, it is like the special effects are pretty bad. It
comes out of his chest at the end. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh.
And it's obviously some kind of like weird Muppet that is there at the end, and it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
But like the concept of it and the way that story unfolds, I think is still amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was originally supposed to be the Borg.
Was it?
Really?
I didn't know that.
They came up with the idea of the Borg and in like early on, and they sort of seeded that idea in Conspiracy, but then they didn't follow up on it because of the writer's strike. So when they actually were able to like put it together an actual Borg episode, they just put it into a Q episode later on. And so it was originally supposed to be introducing the Borg.
Mm.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I'm going back and watching episodes. My life has changed a lot since I've watched a number of these episodes. I have a son now. Things, I cry all the time. I've mentioned this on other episodes.
Yeah.
And so I went back and I watched All Good Things, which you would think would be like prime target for emotional new dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, I really thought the pace was a little too fast for me to really get invested. Given like I'm still completely 100% emotionally hooked with the final scene.
Wait, are you talking about All Good Things?
I say All Good Things?
You said All Good
I'm
Things.
I'm sorry, The Inner Light. I meant The Inner Light.
There we go.
I'm sorry.
Because you and I had this conversation a couple weeks ago, and I know what you're talking about. So,
yeah,
I caught that. There we go.
Yeah, sorry, I was looking at my list and All Good Things is right here.
Inner Light. There we go.
The Inner Light. I'm sorry. So The Inner Light is,
recap, not as emotional as you originally thought it was going to be.
Not as emotional as I thought it was.
Pacing's a little fast.
Pacing's a little fast.
It is.
It's still really cool because for the same reason that Tapestry is on my list, it's very interesting to watch a life that could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
For all the reasons that you mentioned about Tapestry, All Good Things, I think, is great because it shows us Picard in a different light. It shows us Picard.
I get it.
It shows him in an inner light.
In an inner light. it shows us a Picard we've never seen, you know? One that we never thought we could see. Because in Tapestry, we see a Picard that is not okay without being... Like, he's not cool with the way his life turned out.
Yeah.
But in Inner Light, we see him living a different light, or a different life that he is okay with,
mm-hmm.
and being able to find contentment out of something that's not exploring the universe. And so emotionally it doesn't get me, but like theologically it gets me,
mm-hmm.
like philosophically it gets me.
Mm-hmm.
But I found the one that really was wrecking me emotionally multiple times during the episode was, these two episodes that I kind of have to pair together because I think without the one, the second is good, but not great.
I know which one you're talking about.
I know you do.
I agree.
Episode that I loved as a kid, was the first duty, because I loved him going through the trial and doing the spaceship thing. It's great.
It's awesome.
You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And because I love I love the Picard song. Because if you've never heard the Picard song,
I was
just singing
it in my head as I was saying that.
You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Yeah, oh my God. Google, if you're listening to the podcast, you never heard it, Google Picard song now, pause this,
and go listen to it, and realize how amazing it is.
Yeah. Well, I think, just real quick, I know it's... Picard. Yeah. That is, in my opinion, you talk about seminal moments for the characters, that is Picard's best moment.
Yeah.
I think, when he's telling Wesley...
Well, I thought his best moment was in First Contact.
Well,
you mean of the series?
I'm talking about the series.
Okay.
And I would even say First Duty.
The line must be drawn here.
Yeah! Oh, man. Oh, man, don't get me started. You can get me started. I'll be fine with that. But I can talk about that movie for days. Yes. Anyway, what was I saying? Okay, his best moment.
You're co-opting my list here. That's what you're doing.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Just his best moment when he's like, "Whether it be the primary duty of every Starfleet officer."
Yeah, the first duty of every Starfleet is to the truth.
First duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth. Whether it be scientific truth or historical truth or personal truth. I mean, come on. That's his best moment right there.
It is the guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Yes, and if you can't find it within yourself to stand up and tell the truth,
you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
That song is how I remember that speech.
Exactly, absolutely. Right?
Yeah. But that is the defining, that line, though, the scientific truth, historical truth, personal truth, is what defines not just Starfleet, but Star Trek. I mean, that is it.
Well, I think the ironic, I think I'm using ironic right here, is that I agree with you. Yet, I gave an entire presentation at Baylor on how I think he doesn't do that for most of the series.
Yeah.
I mean, just because of Star Trek, and like I said, this is probably a great tangent if I wasn't on my list, but the idea that there's no place for religion, basically,
mm-hmm.
in the perfect science feature.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
It actually goes exactly against his thing.
Continue with your
list. So, again, the first duty, I think, is a great episode for Picard grandstanding, for dressing down Wesley, for the pressures and the character development that it plays throughout the episode. But I think that it adds all the gravity in the world to an episode that comes much later in the series, called Lower Decks. And Lower Decks in and of itself probably shot up to one of my favorite episodes, mm-hmm. Because I already enjoyed it. But it's basically, from what I can remember, like the only episode we really get that shows us what life on the Enterprise would be like if you didn't have an eagle eye into the command crew. It just follows all like these junior officers just wondering if they're going to get promoted, hoping to do enough job, assuming that the command officers hate them or like them or don't know. And they're so focused on like the small things. Like they're not even concerned about like, are there Romulans? Are there this? Are there that? And they don't know what's going on. Whereas almost every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, we as viewers of the show are almost always given some kind of exposition or personal knowledge of the situation, so we understand why people are making decisions they're making. So in Lower Decks, when we see someone from who has been like disgraced but decided to go through the academy anyway, one of the cadets in first duty stationed on the Enterprise, get dressed down by Picard, not know everything that's going on, and still put her life on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch all the other crewmates like have information that they can't share with their friends.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of being on a starship. It just gets me. Like when, I mean like like I said, there's many parts during the episode that it gets me, but then, like I said, at the very end when Picard gets on the intercom,
yeah,
whatever they have, whatever the intercom is in the future,
yeah,
and gives kind of the spiel, like it wrecks me. Mm-hmm. Like thinking about a character that was around earlier, and you know, I think it's like when Star Trek probably is at its best, kind of like Mark when you're talking about like Q, like being the tapestry of the entire series. Like every time Q shows up, he's building on the last time he was there,
mm-hmm.
It makes everything weightier. Mm-hmm. Also,
and Lower Decks is about redemption, and mm-hmm. I mean, especially for the Christian, it's hard to not just be bowled over by redemption stories, and at least for me, it isn't easy to not be bowled over. It's you know, when he brings her, and that was one of the best things about one of the reasons I love Picard as a character so much, and one of the best things about him was you got to see those moments where, you know, Captain is many things, and exploring the weight of that throughout the series is just fascinating, and having to be, you know, a battle leader, but also a personal leader and a mentor and a father figure. And he got those kind of mentor father figure moments were some of his best moments. That was with First Duty, that was with Lower Decks, where he's saying, I brought you here because I know you have this in you. I know that you can redeem yourself from your past mm-hmm. mistakes. To have a father figure say, you know, you can redeem yourself. You know, I have...
Hold on, I need to take some notes.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is one of the ones I got to... I still owe David.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Go ahead.
No, I totally agree with you, Larry. Like, and actually, I think sort of unconsciously that... because I do have almost 3-year-old now, and when I talk to him, when I'm, you know, doing discipline and stuff, a lot of times what comes out of something along the lines of, you know, I love you, and I know that you can do better than this. I know that you're better than that. I know that we've taught you well, and I know that you are. The way that I say it to him, because he's only 2.5, is you're a big boy and a smart kid, and I love you very much. And I think that a lot of that comes out of the way that I saw Picard kind of captain his crew. So I think I totally see where you're going for there, because it got into my head.
So I mean, like, do you also tell him that, like, if he can't learn to poop in the toilet, that he doesn't deserve to wear that uniform?
Like, you don't deserve to wear that pull-up. Yeah,
that's right. You don't deserve to wear that onesie.
Yeah.
Well, I guess at almost 3, he's probably not wearing onesies anymore. At least I hope.
No,
probably not. Sad. Onesies are great. So easy.
Yeah.
Well, so I think we have, but strategically, hopefully, by going through our list of favorite episodes, I think we have automatically hit on something that I want to talk about specifically since it's real world theology. We're not just talking about what we like, but we're noticing things that weave itself through this show that keep popping up. Again, mm-hmm. the thing I love about it is I don't know the spiritual status of every writer who ever submitted an episode for Star Trek The Next Generation, but science fiction gives us the grounds to explore humanity in ways that few other genres do. And whether they know it or not, themes that are resonating with people and the things that they're arguing for are things that we can all get behind and that are... recurring throughout the series. And so I'm kind of curious, David, like what are a couple of themes that you see continually recurring throughout Star Trek The Next Generation?
Well, so I mentioned exploration already, as far as like when I was talking about Darmok and like, you know, making first contact and getting to know people in a peaceful way. And I think we've been really wired as humans to really want to know people in close, intimate ways and understand them, not even just on a surface level, but at a deep level. And I think one of the best parts about Darmok and then about the story, the stories within Next Generation as a whole, is that there's a lot of that there where people, you know, it's just, it's a mystery and they want to solve that mystery and they want to find out what's going on with this thing. But it all sort of points back, I think, to our desire and our drive to know one another well and to know God well. And so I think I see, you know, even when you look into like Q and stuff where we're talking about a literal God who a secular humanist wrote into a TV show about the future. It's mind-blowing that Q even exists. But like that's really sort of, I think, indicative of the fact that humans really want to find out. We want to explore those edges. We want to explore what's out there, and we want to grapple with the tough questions of what it means to be, omnipotent and all powerful. And we also want to get to know these things that are put before us and these people that we're around in a really deep and meaningful way. And I feel like I see that over and over and over in Star Trek. The continued, I guess, recurrence of that theme is really what keeps me coming back to Star Trek, not just Next Generation, but throughout the rest of the series as well, because it's kind of that's that little part of it, that little thread of exploration and of getting to know something. I think that's what makes any episode or movie of Star Trek really good. And also lack of Loxana Troi is another key element.
Well, you mentioned that, but there's that one episode that I thought I was almost going to review, but we didn't need it.
You were gonna review a Loxana Troi?
Yes, because same thing I pointed out to David. There's an episode that she's in where she's in love with a guy in that society where they all like have to kill themselves at a certain age.
Yeah,
is it too short a season? Is that what it's called?
I think it's half a life.
Yeah. That's a good episode.
Half a Life, that's right.
Yeah, Half a Life. And I remember, like, that's one of those episodes where...
it is a great episode.
Yeah, you're at odds because the Prime Directive is rubbing up against, like, what you think is morally right. And usually we see the Prime Directive being bent or even broken at times for this kind of secular humanist morality in Star Trek, The Next Generation. Picard grandstands, they break the Prime Directive, secular humanism prevails, and the thing doesn't happen. But in Half a Life, it doesn't stop it.
Yeah.
Right.
They do it anyway.
Yeah, they do. That's fascinating.
And to a certain degree, you could argue that it's an episode that is basically like pro-assisted suicide.
I think it's an examination of it. I wouldn't say it.
Ultimately how
endorses it in any way.
Well, I mean, I think they try to speak out against it, but ultimately they say it's someone's right to make that choice based on their culture.
I think it's an illustration of saying this culture, you could see this as this culture is defining that as that is a right to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they clearly illustrate that it's not right, that there are, it's a selfish choice that is effective to other people, extremely effective. It your life is connected to other lives, which is the kind of central theme of Star Trek. So we're talking about central themes is, you know, he affects, that's why Loxana Troi is the focus.
Yeah.
Because she's extremely affected by this.
Yeah.
And they're showing, yes, this is what they've chosen as their right, but see what else it destroys. So anyway.
Yeah.
So
boom, I got you there, didn't I?
No, I still don't agree with you, but that's fine.
Yeah. there you go. We redeemed your Loxana thing for you a little bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but all that to say that there's Q episodes. Is that the Q episode with Loxana?
Nope.
No, I'm thinking of... Oh, wait, no, it's the what's-her-face girl. It's the archaeology girl in Cupid, isn't it? Because Picard won't say he likes her or
Bash.
Whatever.
Yeah, Bosh, yeah. Bash, Fosh, whatever.
He
met on Risa.
Well, okay, so obviously still not a great episode, but more because Picard can make everything better. The episode where he has to declare his love for Loxana and does it like the Shakespeare stuff.
The Shakespearean thing.
Oh
yeah, which is where the meme comes from.
Yeah.
which is where the meme comes from.
Exactly.
Why the, you know, heck, we're doing the same. That's where that meme comes from.
Oh.
So funny.
That he makes it amazing.
Oh, it does.
So I'm just saying.
Yeah. That's in the Picard song, too. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
It is.
It's like during, like, the it's like the bridge or something like that, isn't it? So, I mean, like I say, I don't want to say that Loxana doesn't highly annoy me as a character, but I don't think it precludes it from being a bad episode.
I think you'd be weird if she didn't.
Yeah, especially since like it seems like to be the goal, right? Usually right. Troy romance episodes are ones that don't do it for me.
Yeah,
because it usually it's just Riker running around pouting, being like, "I just had sex with like 30 women, but you can't even hold hands with this guy. It makes me mad." I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like. I'm against all this, like, you know, post-marital, pre-marital, whatever, sexual activity, but at least I can agree that, like, if you think it's cool to go bang every woman on Risa, that Troy should at least be able to make out with this dude without you, like, owning her as property. Oh, gosh. I was like, at least follow your own rules there, progressive man.
Right.
Anyway, that's my...
So funny.
Reasons that Riker annoys me.
We're back to themes now.
He's like the most unfeminist character ever.
We need to have the like real world after show, you know, just be you just bashing on Riker.
Just bashing on Riker.
We'll revisit that at the end of the show. But that was the behind the show.
Well, okay, so
back to the themes.
Back on track.
Yeah.
Mark, what are you seeing that's going like that you see like it's running its course through all of all of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
I mean, there's a lot, but going back to David's point, it's about exploration, and I sort of talked about it, like how I'm writing this 4-part sort of series about the tapestry of it. It's you're exploring. It's really ultimately about what it means to be human. That's most personified in Data, which is why I think you have a character that's so organically and fully embodies the themes of your show that carries, because you were talking about that this being more episodic and not, you know, kind of a serialized show, but Data's story continues through, you know, he progresses as a character in a very sort of serialized way because he's meeting these kind of mile markers throughout his journey to understand what it means to become human. The whole show is really just about what that costs to be human, what that means to be human. I mean, like, so space is not the actual final frontier. The only frontier there is human nature. I mean, whether we're exploring the West as, you know, the front, you know, the wild frontier, or space, the final frontier, whatever you explore, you're really just exploring yourself. You know, you're finding out truths, what we believe theologically as eternal truths, that reflect the nature of God and our relationship with Him. But whatever you explore in life, and I think Star Trek affirms this, is you're exploring yourself. You're exploring your species, and so I really feel like that's all. I mean, every other theme runs out of that, whether it's a theme of redemption or, you know, pride or anger or, you know, what self, you know, examining assisted suicide. I mean, these things are all about what it takes, what it costs, what it looks like, what it feels like to be alive, to be, you know, in this universe that, you know, we believe God has created, and what that means for us in relationship to Him, what it means now temporarily and what it means eternally. I think Star Trek is one of, you know, you're talking about what the writer's background spiritually were. A lot of them are atheists. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gene Roddenberry created, he was a self-affirmed atheist. But they affirm all these eternal truths anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and we talk about that a lot in science fiction, Doctor Who especially. I mean, it just affirms all these. You can't not. I mean, if you're exploring humanity, you're exploring what God created, and you're exploring, you know, the nature of your relationship with Him. So Star Trek is all about that, really. I mean, whether it's Darmok and using metaphors, or whether it's holodeck misfires, or, you know, traveling through time, I mean, it all, whatever you're exploring, what God made you to be. So that's, to me, that's what Star Trek is. And you can go into all the nuance of that and all the little specific themes, but to me, that's that. It's personified the way I kind of see it personified, at least how I'm writing this tapestry thing is to be, is that you're exploring, you know, kind of human nature. You're exploring your eternal significance. You're exploring space as how do you exist in your kind of personal space, and then you're examining your own personal, you know, very deep down, what makes you you. So that's how I see that question.
That's really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, so moving like one step further than that, I think that my least favorite episodes of Star Trek: The Next Generation are the ones where the morality tale is imposed and not discovered. At least the best, that's the best way I can describe it. It's when they go to a planet and they go, everything here is backwards. Let's bring proper morality to you.
Correct. Yeah.
Like in a very direct way. And it's not even that.
And I think that happened a lot more in the original series. And I think that's why I like Next Gen so much better.
Yeah, I would say that's how I see the original series. Like they show up, they're like, this is all backwards.
Yeah.
There's blue people and green people. There's no difference. Everyone's just their own color. Like that's the original series to me. Mm-hmm. Like people show up and they're like half black, half white. And we're like, this is obviously about race. You know, like I think that happens in the Next Generation, but I don't think it happens quite as often. Mm-hmm. I think you get episodes where, you know, Riker falls in love with kind of like an androgynous species that aren't supposed to identify as male or female and stuff. I think you get it in a couple other places. But like I said, or like one of like an episode that people really point to as like a really great episode is the one where they start worshiping the Picard.
Yeah.
You know, and they talk about how religion's all dangerous and dumb.
Who watches the Watchers, I think. So.
And I like that's them going down there, and that's them going, look, there is like, we're just like science you don't understand yet. Religion is dangerous. Belief makes you do stupid things. Mm-hmm. Like that's them imposing. I mean, obviously, I'm as a Christian, I'm going to have problems with them saying these things. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's incredibly right. weak. Whereas when they go and they find themselves in a situation and something is, they allow something to change them. Why even holding on to their basic tenets and beliefs? I think that's where it's at its strongest. And for a show that's about exploration, like I said, when you're exploring things, you're trying to discover something new. Mm-hmm. You're not taking something to people to beat them in submission. That's not exploration. That's imperialism, you know, or that's colonization.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, and I think that's one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine actually is like this big melting pot of people all trying to figure out how to learn from one another and like found that like everyone has value. You know, even the Cardassians, you know, so
what do you think about an episode like The Chase?
No, bad with titles, man.
Yeah, bad with titles.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So that's the one where they discover the secret code hidden in everybody's DNA, and they've got to like fly all around the galaxy picking up more DNA. And at the end, it turns out that it was a computer program, and there's a hologram of an ancient woman inside it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Ancient woman. Well, I mean, so in what relation to what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, and the Klingons and the Cardassians.
Just as far as like.
All the bad guys are like chasing the same thing, and it's all these. They think it's this big weapon.
Yeah.
They think it's like this. Oh, you're gonna, you know. And so they want it, and there's all this deception, and like, you know, the Enterprise is just more curious about the whole thing, mm-hmm. and then they eventually realize it's just. It's a great moment because the Klingons are like, "It's just a woman saying it," you know, like it's just a woman. It's really funny.
It's basically a plot of StarCraft, but that's not.
See, that's the thing that like you were mentioning this stuff about, you know, exploring things and exploring yourself and finding, you know, reality like that. That's really they're really going after this meaning of life stuff in that particular episode and sort of tracking down the source of all life in the galaxy, as it turns out. And I don't know. It reminded me of that on sort of a thematic level.
Yeah. Well, and so I like where both of you guys went with it because, you know, we talk about atheist writers are probably, like I said, I don't think it's a stretch. I'm not trying to like pigeonhole all these writers, but I don't think it's a stretch to assume that most of them are atheists. Most of them are at minimum probably secular humanist, agnostic humanist,
yeah, probably.
At best. And yet they're exploring things, even though many times, like I said, this is one of the things that I got to kind of argue when I was at Baylor, kind of saying, like, Star Trek is always seeking to discover, but they automatically start with that, like, with one arm tied behind their back. Like, it's like, we're open to any possibility as long as that possibility isn't a god.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we're open to any idea in the entire universe, except that, you know, things happen that we can't explain with science.
Right.
Like, and the irony, again, hope I'm using irony, right, is that most of their episodes point to something greater than themselves.
Mm-hmm. They've literally met a god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
does God want with a starship?
Why does God need a starship?
That's not the one I meant.
I know. I just, every time that, I think we had an internet conversation about that.
We did have an internet conversation. So if you take that one step further, and we're talking about how, as a secular humanist, like Gene Roddenberry, envision this incredibly positive display of the future, this hopeful goal, this hopeful dream that humanity will achieve at some point. Humanity, in his mind, will get to a point where we all eradicate poverty, we all eradicate hunger, mm-hmm. we all come together as one human race and decide something is better. Mm-hmm. Is that even possible?
Who's going to start that one?
Well, I think what's really interesting, based upon the conversation that we've been having, is that, you know, Gene Roddenberry's ideal future, he wants it to be so, you know, atheistic or secular and agnostic, at least. And yet he and his writers can't help inserting, you know, literal gods in the case of, you know, figurative pursuits of God into the narrative. And so as much as they want to make it sound like this Platonic ideal of a perfect future is inherently science-based and there's no mysticism around it, you just can't get around it. There's no way around the fact that God has to be there. And so, I mean, I could go super spiritual on this and say, yeah, the Gene Roddenberry perfect future is going to happen, but it's going to happen in heaven when we're all, yeah. I mean, yeah, okay.
New heavens, new earth, that's yeah. true.
But I mean, right, exactly. And I don't mean to discount that as like a non-truth, but I don't think that's really what you're getting at. I assume you're asking, are we going to see that on Earth? And I think it's possible, but not in the way that sort of like everybody assumes, as far as it being this completely agnostic, atheistic future. It's going to have to require a lot of people working for something greater than themselves. And I don't think that's excluded in Star Trek, but it's sort of excluded in this idea of Star Trek, if that makes sense. The sort of if you had a one-line show note about what Star Trek is, it would not include this pursuit of something greater. And I think that having all of humanity working for something greater is, like, conceivably, in my mind, possible. It's just not something that would work the way that sort of everybody seems to think it is.
I am when you're talking about it that way, like I said, not to make it a trick question, but it would be another case of the writers realizing what it would take for a future like that. Because it's been a while since I have seen First Contact, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But the whole mythos is that humanity achieves warp drive or warp flight. Uh-huh. What flight at that point?
Warp capability.
Yeah. And the narrative goes, first contact is made, humanity realizes that they are not alone in the universe, or that they are not the highest idea.
Yeah.
And that causes them to come together as a species. Mm. And I mean, that concept is what we believe. Like, once we realize that we're not the end, mm-hmm. and we realize that there is something in the heavens, yeah. like, mm-hmm. That is beyond us, like, it makes us look and say, you know, my petty differences with my fellow man are not the end all. Like, this isn't right. the end of the story. I am compelled to do something different, to come together with those people around me, because there's, like I said, there's something more. Mm. Yeah. And I think that's that thing that you're saying, like, something we have to come together to bring us all together. And like I said, I think we agree. And I think that even people who are atheists would agree, like, for us to really come together, we would have to have, like, this common realization, this common cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's written right into Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
It's just basically yeah. a big metaphor for what we already believe.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like I said, I'm not trying to co-opt First Contact. I'm just trying to say, like, they're explaining something that we've already explained. They just don't like our explanation. So right. they've created another being that comes from the heavens right. that makes us look upward instead of downward.
Yeah.
What you're describing is saying that it cannot be by faith alone, because we operate, you know, by faith, you know, largely. And I think that is a central issue in what, you know, if a Vulcan ship landed in, God help him if it was America, but
God help him really if it was almost anywhere.
Anywhere. Maybe like Russia Australia? Would be bad. Yeah, Australia, that'd be a good one.
Maybe.
Australia might be nice.
Antarctica? Sentient penguins?
Let's just hope they don't meet, like, you know, Trump first.
Yeah.
But if a Vulcan ship came down, theoretically, that would be, you know, that, not theoretically, that would be physical proof that we were not alone. That would right. be, you know, so the flaw in, like, kind of what you're saying, not that what you're saying is flawed because you're correct, but the flaw for humanity to believe it is they can't see, touch, feel, hop on board God's spaceship. You know, and
but we're already on God's spaceship.
Yeah, oh gosh. No. It's like a dad theological joke.
That's right.
Theological dad joke. But you know what I'm saying. So it's like there's that central issue. And for my sort of answer to the question is not what I want my answer to the question to be. I don't think it's possible.
Mm-mm.
But I don't want to say that. Like, I wish that weren't true. I wish I didn't think that. And it occurs to me when you ask that question that I might have a friend listening to this podcast. I don't know if she will. I don't know if she's ever even heard Real World, but
she probably has. We're pretty popular.
Yeah, we're pretty popular.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of discussions. She grew up in church and she's left now, and that's long story short. I won't go into much detail, but you know, there was a central kind of issue between what she believes now and what I believe, and that's you know, it's essentially total depravity. You know, this idea that where this person is at is that man is not inherently flawed, whereas mm-hmm. you know, I so badly want to be able to cross that bridge to her and say, yeah, you're right, but I can't. And that's like where she is at, full stop. That's it. That means that Christianity, I don't believe it anymore, because I don't feel like, you know, humanity is inherently flawed, that we are flawed from creation or from birth. And I do. And it just, part of why Star Trek resonates for me is that I want to believe this can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And well, go ahead.
I don't disagree with you there. That, like, this is, I don't see Star Trek, the future that Star Trek is in, as being perfect, because there are still problems, you know, especially after you get out of the first couple of seasons and Gene Roddenberry isn't, you know,
yeah.
doesn't have his tight rein on the show anymore. There are a lot more interpersonal problems in the world. And so,
and you're looking, sorry. I'm just to reiterate your point. you're looking at other species. I mean, you get into Deep Space Nine and all those species that are like on this, you know, space station. Like, I mean, the Ferengis are all about greed. I mean, they're that's what defines their nature. So humanity itself, I mean, if we're looking at, are we somehow cosmically related to these other species, and they're flawed, you know? So, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I didn't mean to interrupt you.
The way that I took the question as far as what the ideal of Gene Roddenberry's future is, I was sort of taking it as like the same thing as what we were talking about the point of Next Generation is about exploration, about, you know, finding out the mysteries of the universe. And I really do think that if humanity lasts long enough, and if the Lord tarries long enough, I think that is in the future. Sorry to bring sort of, you know, really deep churchy language, Terry. If we're still here long enough into the future to be able to explore, I think it's fairly inevitable that we will. That's kind of the way I read it. I agree with you. We're not going to ever see a perfect future free from strife, but I don't really see that as the point of Trek. I see that as like, this is the best humanity can be. It's still not perfect, but we're getting out there and we're doing more stuff and we're finding out the mysteries of the universe. And so that's sort of where I was going with that. So,
And I totally agree with that. And the closest that I come to saying, yes, this is possible, is saying it's close to possible. You know, as close as I come to saying it's possible is saying it's close to possible. But no, it's I think a version of this is, like you said, I really do believe a version of this is in the future. I don't know what it'll look like. I don't know how it'll get there. Maybe it is a first contact with another species. You know, I love to, when I talk to non-Christian, non-believing, non-religious friends and family, I've had this discussion with family members of like, you know, if you're a Christian, I mean, do you believe there's life out in the universe? And I say, maybe. I don't know.
Sure, why not?
I don't know. You know, that shocks a lot of people to, you know, because I guess they think Christians have it all figured out. But, or Christians think they have it all figured out. But, I don't know. Right. There is possibility. And that's another big theme that comes out of Star Trek for me is possibility. Possibility is a huge part of Star Trek of like, things are possible. Don't limit your possibility. And I think that's extremely important for Christians. It's not, don't limit your possibility. Do you understand what you believe? You believe in a God? You believe that God, out of nothingness, created all of this stuff, and you want to limit the possibility? No way.
Right.
I mean, open up your mind bigger to, you know. So anyway, I think this, especially what you're saying, Fizz, if there is a common goal, and there is a true common goal, yes, I think humanity can unite under a common goal.
So my caveat would be that I don't think there is anything true enough that we would actually be able to break our human nature or our depraved nature.
Yeah, I don't think
outside of Christ.
I stand as not a completely firm place on total depravity, but mostly firm. You know, I think there's nuance to it, but
well, like I said, I think when you talk to people, non-belief people, and they kind of like, go back to your example of, you know, people would need the Vulcan ship to come down so they could not have to have faith but have these tangible things. I would say that my faith isn't faith alone, but like, I can look around at the world and see all the evidence that I need of how the Bible describes what the world is like and what it's like in the absence of God, or when it's in rebellion to God. And when I think about the Star Trek universe, that's right, the Star Trek.
T-R-A-C-K. Do we say track or trek?
It's trek. But I'm from the South, so I get to say track.
Track.
Track. Star Trek.
It's like wrestling.
It's wrestling. when I look at that future, I see two things that really confuse me on a no evidence to support this level. One is, I think it's exceedingly arrogant to portray humanity in a light in which we go around the galaxy with our prime directive and our moral relativity, and all we do is run into species that are personifications of the worst in humanity. That we have, you know, we're not angry like the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
We're not prideful like the Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
We're not greedy like the Ferengi.
Mm-hmm.
We're not power hungry like the Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humanity is above all that.
We're not all consumers like the Borg.
Yeah. We're not consumers like the Borg. Yeah. And they go on and on. Basically, every race that we run into in Star Trek The Next Generation that is not human is a representation of something in ourselves that I think we actually can't get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incredibly arrogant to think that we could ever get past that, especially on our own. I mean, if you look throughout history, even when humanity is at its best, whenever you could argue that was, there is still a large swath of humanity that is not at its best. And usually the methods that the best use would not be morally acceptable at other times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about like one of the only things that ever unites an entire people group is like war.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, the only thing that's united us in the first place is something that's atrocious.
Yeah.
The acts that we're willing to commit as a people group that has come together mm-hmm. and that is the closest thing to unity that we would ever get are atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just, I sit and then I look at this future where if there's no poverty, it's almost like that. It's not quite, but it's almost like that. If there's no evil, then there can't be any good kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If there's no poverty, if there's no loss, then is there ever truly any altruism?
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone ever doing good? Like if everyone can do whatever they want because there's replicators and stuff, you're telling me that it's not just like that second half of WALL-E. You get replicators. How many people do you honestly know right now would not just sit in their home and replicate everything that they needed?
Right, right.
Why would they work?
Yeah.
Why would you go to school unless someone tell you that you're dumb?
Right.
Like because you're in a militaristic society that's basically a navy.
Right, but you're speaking from the idea of total depravity, and that's why, like, I don't want to believe that because I care enough. It's like my friend. The reason why I'm saying this is I want to meet her there is I care about her. I genuinely care about humanity and my friends and my family, and I want us all to, I mean, you know, how many broken families exist on this planet? I mean, you know what I'm saying? So I think you can.
Okay, so I'll put it this way, and I'm stealing this from Reed Lackey, who was supposed to be on here with us, which actually is probably good he's not, because we were 2 hours or something.
Still, we missed you, still Reed. We missed you, buddy. We missed you, Reed.
I was talking to him about, like, hey, is Gene Roddenberry's future possible? And he says that he doesn't believe that we'll ever be able to overcome our own depravity on this side of the New Jerusalem. And I'm a completely either. But he also points out that Star Trek The Next Generation does well because it is hopeful. And it points us in this direction. And it's right and good for us to imagine and pursue these ideals.
Yeah.
So I would say that why I never think, I don't think Gene Roddenberry's future is even remotely close to what we're going to see, like this side of heaven or this side of new heavens and new earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is completely right and good to pursue those things that are right and good. It's why, I often listen to Tim Keller give sermons, and he'll talk very favorably about like secular humanists for the same reason. Like I can get along with secular humanists just fine because, you know, 90% of the things that secular humanists agree or want are typically things that are good for society, good for personal health, good for their neighbors, you know, good for flourishing. Like they want to protect the environment. They want to be good stewards of things. Now we can argue about like how they got to that, like that reasoning in the first place. But when someone's doing something and pursuing something good, we should encourage that, mm-hmm. whether they believe in God or not, because yeah. it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
And I can get, you know, I can get behind that, and I think it's worthy, it's worthwhile to pursue those things. Ultimately, I just don't put my hope in those actions and those ideals to save anybody or to turn yeah. us into this Gene Roddenberry society.
Mm-hmm.
David knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and I agree. Like, I totally affirm total depravity. I think you're absolutely right there. I see Next Generation as more of an exploration of the pursuit of that goal rather than I think they still have total depravity. I don't think they've overcome it. I think that they still have all the same problems we've got. They've just hidden a lot of them beneath replicators and holodecks, and that the reality behind it is that they're still pursuing that same thing, and that's why they're exploring, and that's why they're going out there. And so I don't know. I agree with you totally. I think that pursuit is really something that we can look to track to sort of spur us onward as a sort of a I don't know.
Well, I think that's why. I think one of the most kind of like laughed at characters in all of Star Trek: The Next Generation is probably the most human, and that's Barclay.
Barclay, yeah.
Barclay is the most human character probably in all of Star Trek. So,
I mean, really, and it's like what you've said, David. It still exists there. You know, yeah. It's not like they've created a perfect universe, and really, they don't even explore it on Earth enough to convince anyone. Yeah. That it is totally eradicated on Earth. One of my pet peeves about Star Trek is they go, and when they visit a planet, they visit like a town on the planet. They visit like one section of people on the planet. And that would be like them showing up in Greensboro, North Carolina, and like we visited the human race because we went to Greensboro, North Carolina, USA, you know? And they're like, we visited this planet, and it's just like they visited, you know, this one little section. It's like they miss. Now, it's morality plays. It's
when everything is a stereotype or a placeholder.
Yeah, it's all these things represent something metaphorically. Morality plays, you know, do that. They simplify things to build a greater. And obviously, it's effective. I mean, it's great entertainment. We've been talking about this for 2 hours, but you know,
right.
That was always one of my pet peeves. It's like it didn't occur to me until I was an adult, and it's like, wait a minute. That's an awfully big planet, you know.
It's a similar sort of thing to like the Star Wars planets. There's only ever one
weather
biome on the planet. Yeah,
this tree planet.
It's a winter planet or a
sand planet. Yeah. Yeah,
this is called dirt planet.
This is lava planet.
Yeah. What's on that planet? It's mostly lava.
Just everywhere
lava.
There's also a castle.
Yeah, and a castle.
Yeah, but I think it does follow the assumption that Star Trek makes that like one segment, one idea, one part of a people group represents that whole people group. And it's problematic if you follow it to its natural conclusion.
Well, it's problematic if you just look around today. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. If you apply it to today, it's extremely depending on what side you're on. Yeah. But you know, I think
there's good on both sides.
That's what I was referencing. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Oh gosh.
It's derailed.
Let's not go there. Yeah, that's what I was referencing. Many sides, whatever. But yeah, if you apply this to actual life, it doesn't work because this is a morality play. It doesn't have total application. Like a movie, that. Like a drama would, you know, in that way. So anyway,
because we have gone for so long, I want to kind of wrap us up now. And we've already talked about our favorite episodes. We've talked about most of the things that I really wanted to get through. We had a really great discussion right here at the end, about theme and Gene Roddenberry's future. Even though, thank you, Gene Roddenberry. wherever you are, you know, for at least getting this started, you know, because it's Shay's world, which shows, you know, even in total depravity, God can work to make great things.
Yeah.
Such a condescending.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you one last kind of fun question. So hopefully you'll be able to answer this question and then tell people how they can follow your work around the internet, and then we'll close up. All right. So my question is, if you were in the Star Trek universe, what would you be doing? David.
Mm.
And also, how can people find your work?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, obviously I'd like to think that I'd be, you know, captaining a ship or even like the chief engineer on a ship, but let's be perfectly honest here. I would probably be like the guy in 10 Forward that picks up the cups at the end of the scene. Like that's probably what I would be doing. Like just one of those things where like, you know, that's the only way I could get on the flagship of the Federation is to just like do whatever. So the answer to what I would be doing in the Star Trek universe is whatever it took to be on the ship that's making all those discoveries and finding all that new life and new civilizations and boldly going where no one has gone before. That would be what I would be doing. In all reality. So anyway, you can find me on Redeeming Culture, redeemingculture.com. And like we're doing Trektember this month. And once that's over, we'll still have more content coming out every week. So hope you can join us over there. You can find me on Twitter. Probably the easiest way to get to me is at Redeeming Culture. Also on Facebook, Redeeming Culture. I've got personal handles on there too, but then I have to start spelling it and stuff. And there's an I and an L in there, and it's all just confusing. So, yeah, just find me on Redeeming Culture.
Done. Mark.
Oh, and Letterboxd too.
Yeah, always Letterboxd. Except me.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm on Letterboxd. I just don't keep up with it as like most people do. If I were in the Star Trek universe, I've never really thought about that. I mean, I'm bald. Does that mean I can command? I think
you can be kind of a snarky admiral or something like that.
Yeah, I want to say that I'd be, you know, one of the ones eager to, you know, hop on a shuttlecraft and you know head down to a planet or get beamed down or, you know, do all the exploration, all the dangerous stuff. I feel like I would just be in the holodeck like Barclay. I feel like I would be Barclay.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be scared of like, you know, the vacuum of space. You know what I mean? If I'm thinking realistically, like if I'm thinking like, you know, in my imagination, what would be awesome, you know, I mean, I'd be on the bridge, you know, if I could do anything, I would just hang out with Data. I mean, cause he's so cool.
So you'd be Geordi.
Yeah, but yeah, I could do, I'm not smart enough for engineering, but,
that's true.
I'm not a math guy. I'm a words guy. I write for a living.
You'd be Jake Sisko. You'd be a reporter on the front lines.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Of the universe.
Yeah, I don't know. On the Enterprise, I don't know who represents me other than, I really feel like I could be Barclay, but I'm not that smart. I feel like I could, you know, you're faced with, that's what I love so much about like Q-Who and going out into the far reaches of space and him saying, you don't understand what's out here. You don't. I mean, it's frightening. Mm-hmm. It's frightening to think about how vast space really is. So, and
it's,
you know,
not for the timid.
It is not for the timid. That's what he said. Nice quote there. Nice sneaky quote. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, you know, it's funny because, you know, starships blow up all the time. So even the Enterprise has blown up a few times. It's come back.
Yeah.
But it's scary out there. So I don't know. I'd like to think that I'd be in command or in some important role. But I feel like I'd just be making up stuff in the holodeck. Because, I mean, how cool is the holodeck? Let's be honest.
Well, I think there's an interesting lack of, I mean, this is mainly because I can't think of any off the top of my head. There's an incredible lack of storytellers in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the closest thing we get is when we get to Deep Space Nine, I believe, and like you have Jake Sisko, who is writing finally.
Yeah.
Who is just being a reporter and telling people stories.
On Voyager, the doctor, the holographic doctor, writes a holo novel.
that's right.
I would be writing hollow novels. Exactly what I would be doing, literally.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm a filmmaker, writer. You can find me, Fizz. Join the Real World discussion group. I like to facilitate a lot of things, a.k.a. start trouble. you can find me there. I am on Twitter and Letterboxd and all that kind of stuff, but I'm most active if you want to chat at me.
Chat at me, bro.
Talk more Trek or other things like Game of Thrones and Doctor Who. I'm most active talking. I'm more of a TV guy. So I was a TV kid, and I'm still a TV guy. So I do a lot of the TV writing on Real World, and I do episodic reviews of Game of Thrones, Doctor Who. So I typically talk a lot about those. Spend a lot of time on that. So come find me there and read Real World with Theology. There's a lot of good writers out there, and it's thanks for listening.
Thank you. I will.
So. Because of my love of being in charge of people and my achiever kind of desire, competition to be better than everybody, I want to say that I'd be a captain.
I could see you as a captain, yes.
I think realistically, though, I think I could eventually become a captain. But I don't think I would be the best captain. I don't think I would be Picard. Like, I don't think I would ever attain. I mean, like, I realize that bar is insanely high,
yeah,
based on this imaginary person that we've all that we've all fallen in love with. I think honestly, my best role, based on, I used to think I was the leader, like, for the longest time, because I lead a lot of things in real life. But I have found in real life, and now upon personal reflection, that I think I'm a great number one. Mm-hmm. I think I personally thrive in positions of kind of authority, but under someone who has better, like a little bit better vision than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly think I would be like the first officer of a ship, which is a bummer because, again, I really can't stand Riker all that much. But I think that's basically like able to take command when the captain's not there.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I'm looking to them for final kind of headship,
mm-hmm,
of the starship.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm not sure if there's like podcasting in the 24th century or whatever.
Yeah, you're well ahead of your time, Fizz.
Yeah. Clearly. I think I'd be a first officer.
Awesome.
I could be an android. That's cool.
I would love,
well, I was probably an android until I had a son, and now I found emotions, so I got my emotion chip put in.
There you go.
Now I cry all the time. So you can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter. Like Mark mentioned, come to the Real World Theology discussion group. Again, we don't typically do like specific questions, but because I love Star Trek The Next Generation, and I could literally talk about this unendingly.
For 2.5 hours?
Absolutely. Well, for more than that, you know, obviously.
2.5 years.
2.5 years. you know, if people have had a replicator and I could, you know,
yeah,
poop in my chair and stuff, then I would do these things. Yeah. But
never go to the bathroom.
I really do want to know, people who love Star Trek The Next Generation, like, what kind of impact or what kind of impression did it make on you when you were younger?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impression does it leave on you still? What are your favorite episodes? Yeah. Why? Like,
this is a nerd out type of show. Everybody's got something to nerd out over. And yeah, if you're a fan, that we've been nerding out for 2 hours, so what? Mm-hmm. That's your turn.
I mean, if you're still listening to this, I hope you really like Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh my gosh.
If
you've listened to all of this episode, you're officially a Trekkie.
Yeah, there you go. You don't have to know what the name of the episodes are. Like, it just made an impact on you.
We don't know what the name of the
episodes are. Yeah, I'm terrible.
David's way better at that than we are.
Well, I mean, even my favorite bands, I have no idea what they're...
Yeah, you need to know the name of the...
Yeah.
Like, I just listen to the CD in my car, you know? I never actually know what the name of the songs are. Because I was never looking at the little album art thing. I just was like, well, this is a song that's like... Da-da-da-ba-ba-do.
You know, it was that episode that started with space.
Yeah.
The final frontier.
That one. I love that one. That's my favorite.
That's my favorite episode. The one that starts with space, the final frontier. All the ones that start with that.
Gosh. So whatever your Star Trek story is, whenever this episode goes up, make sure you're going to Redeeming Culture. Check out Trek Timber. It's going to be great. You'll be able to geek out over that. Check out Mark's series that he's doing over at Real World Theology, which you can find at realworldtheology.com, along with show notes for this episode. Go to realworldtheology.com/support. See how you can support the show. Depending on when this episode airs and what else we've got going on, there might be even new ways to support us at that point. As always, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. If you've listened to this long, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on this geek journey with us.
Indeed.
Letting us just reminisce and really talk about how much this has played a part in our life in the past, now, and probably how it will continue in the future. Mm-hmm. For now, for Real World Theology.
Bold to go.
And Redeeming Culture.
That's right.
And Redeeming Culture. Absolutely.
You don't get to co-op this show. I'm not putting my name on your articles. No, not for Redeeming Culture, for Real World Theology.
Oh, now we're starting the feud, huh?
That's right.
Yeah. The Dominion War.
Dominion War. Stay on your side of the wormhole, buddy.
We'll be watching you.
Yeah.
It's just getting better. I'm never going to be in the show because it's so good. Anyway.
So.
I don't even know what I was saying. I'm Fizz, reminding you that story is powerful, entertainment is not mindless. Bye bye.
The sky is the limit.
Engage.
I was going to say engage.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
Man, it's like you're living in the 24th century.
I know, right?
Where's your replicator? Can I go get a cup of tea?
So the problem is that we don't have replicators, but our iPads are thinner.
They are thinner. They are thinner. I may just spontaneously break out in this theme song.
Such a good theme song.
It is the best.
It is really good.